listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. It's your pet. Health matters. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Welcome to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. I'm Dr. Diane Levitan from Peace Love Pets Veterinary Care on Long Island, New York. Thank you so much for listening to us on The Pet Doctor. Today we're discussing a really very scary problem for pet owners. Have you ever seen a person faint, have a stroke, or an epileptic fit? It's so scary just to imagine it in another person, but have you ever seen that in a pet? And did you even know that pets, just like humans, can suffer from seizures from a number of different causes? They can even have epilepsy. I doubt anyone listening ever thought their pet would have a seizure. It's not something we're generally prepared for. Hopefully, after listening to this episode, you'll have a much better understanding of seizures in our pets, what they are, why they occur, and what we can do about them. We're very lucky today to have a special guest and really phenomenal expert, Dr. Jason Burke, a board-certified veterinary internal medicine specialist and a board-certified veterinary neurologist, who's going to help us understand the conditions associated with seizures. Dr. Jason Burke is the co-founder and staff neurologist and internist with the Animal Specialty Center in Yonkers, New York. He went to veterinary school at Texas A&M University and did an internship and two residencies at the Animal Medical Center in New York City. He's a certified acupuncturist as well. He's an extremely accomplished veterinary neurologist and has performed not only thousands of consultations in the medicine side, but also thousands of surgeries, neurosurgeries, including hundreds of brain surgeries. He's one of the only two veterinary neurologists in the country to have implanted a vagal nerve stimulator to help control epilepsy. He's published numerous articles pertaining to veterinary neurology and has presented at many professional conferences around the country. His amazing experience with both neurology and internal medicine disciplines allows him to provide his patients with real extreme expertise covering a really broad spectrum of acute and chronic illnesses. We're really fortunate to have him here with us today to discuss seizures in our pets. We'll be right back to speak with Dr. Jason Burke after these messages.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Your dog digs a hole under your fence, and the next thing you know, protect your pets with Dig Defense, the amazing new product that keeps your pets in the yard. Dig Defense is safe, fast, and easy. Each unit is made from 4-gauge galvanized American steel and can be used for repairing digouts, filling gaps, or to hold fences down so pets can't get under them. Dig Defense provides peace of mind that your pets are contained humanely and safely. Visit digdefense.com today. DIGDEFENCE.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Burke, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Diana. Pleasure. Looking forward to it.
We're really looking forward to hearing all about epilepsy and seizures today. I think many of us in the audience are wondering, what exactly is a seizure?
Well, seizures are basically electrical discharges of the brain that's not wanted. It happens spontaneously and out of the blue, and there can be an underlying cause or there may not be an underlying cause, which is what happens with epilepsy. With seizures, they can, like you said, be very, very scary. It's very difficult for clients to watch their pet go through a seizure or, you know, try and figure out what's wrong with them or why they're having them.
What does it look like?
That's the hard part. The classic seizure, nobody misses, I tell everybal. They can see those. Those are grand mal or generalized seizures, we call them, where the dog will fall over, or cat or any type of animal can fall over, get rigid, have rhythmic or non-rhythmic jerkings of the legs, the mouth will open, they can urinate, they can defecate, they salivate, and they can even vocalize. And typically most seizures will last 30 seconds to 2 minutes.
And what do other types of seizures look like?
Other types, there's two broad other categories called partial motor seizures, where literally it can look like your dog just is twitching, has a little jerk, a little spontaneously jolt, like it was shocked by electricity. And a lot of times those are mistaken to not be seizures. The other broad category is what we call complex partial seizures. These have had many names over the years. They've been called psychomotor seizures or limbic lobe epilepsy. And basically, they have these complex automatisms or repetitive motions. We have all these interesting names in veterinary medicine, stargazers and flybiters and pounce prey, you know, type of movements. And we see those primarily as a form of epilepsy. Less commonly, they have a physical cause to cause them.
I think we'll probably go into that a little bit more in a moment, but I have a question. So when my dog's sleeping, a lot of times I'll see him have these rhythmic motions of his legs or his body. Is that a seizure?
Typically not. Most of the time, dogs do dream, or we perceive that they dream, and they can have these little jerkings and joltings and yowlings, and typically those are briefer in general. And the big differentiation is if you do wake them up, they come right out of it. As opposed to a seizure, you really can't stop a seizure. They may spontaneously end when you go over to the dog, but in general, they're going to continue no matter what you do until they stop on their own.
Okay. I was wondering, because that seems to happen. A lot of people have that question, so I'm glad we can make sure that differentiate when it is a seizure and when it isn't. So just like dreaming, there are probably other things that can look like a seizure that really aren't seizures. Is that right?
That is correct, and it's definitely the most important thing when you see your animal have an episode, and I always leave them as episodes first because there's other things that can cause abnormal behaviors or movements with animals. So I always tell people, what was your dog doing before a cat? What was your dog or cat doing during it? How long did it last? And then how do they recover? For example, syncope, which is a heart-related problem, a lot of animals will collapse. They can even urinate. They can jerk a little bit. But the big differentiation a lot of times with those are they're very short episodes. They only last 10 or 20 seconds. And the reason I tell people that is if my heart stops for a lot longer than that, a lot of times it doesn't restart. So you can have a fatal arrhythmia where your heart will stop beating. So syncope is a short episode. Another type of episode would be imbalance, vertigo. Dogs can't tell us they're dizzy, but if all of a sudden you get very, very dizzy, they can fall over, they can thrash, and they can be, you know, again, acting abnormal. So some of the hints for that would be that their eyes are jerking or that they have a head tilt. Because most seizures, if we talk about the eyes either stay fixed or they roll back in the head or they have a blank stare. With balance episodes, they'll be jerking back and forth. We call that nystagmus. Other examples of episodes that could be mistaken for seizures would be narcolepsy and cataplexy, where you completely just fall asleep. It's rare in dogs and cats, but we do see it. So there's a whole host of things that can do this, and that's why as the pet owner, I know it's a very stressful time. The two things I tell them is look at a clock, see how long it is. Second thing is describe. And the third thing is be very careful. Animals don't know what they're doing when they're seizuring. They're not really aware. So they can bite you and become very aggressive during the seizure, even coming out of the seizure. So you have to take a lot of precautions.
Oh, that's really important. So when you talk about keeping a log, so if people are seeing certain behaviors on a repetitive basis and they're not really sure what it is, even before they go to their general practitioner, they should definitely write down these episodes?
Write them down, or now in our age of cell phones, take a video of even part of it. Sometimes they don't get all of it, but getting a view of it will help your veterinarian help differentiate between these types of episodes. The other things that they can do as well is look at the gum color. Is it purple? Is it pink? Is it gray? A lot of heart-related ones, they won't be as pink as they will be during a seizure. So it's video it, record how long, tell us how what was going on before, during, and after.
I have a great idea. After the show, we're going to post an example of a log that you can use for your pet if it has these strange kinds of behaviors and you want to take that information to your veterinarian. So we'll definitely post that on our website after the show today. Thank you for that great information, Dr. Berg. So you were saying that the pet doesn't really feel what's going on, doesn't know what's going on. Do you need to hold their tongue? A lot of people think you need to grab their tongue, or they want to know what's going on with their pet. Can they soothe them out of this? What are they feeling? What are they thinking?
No, that's what every pet owner does worry about. And we only can basically analogize what we know with humans having it. So pain-wise, only 2% of seizures in people, they perceive pain during them. So I will usually tell people most animals, even if they cry out or vocalize, they're not really aware of it. My example is, people can be talking when you're sleeping, and you don't hear the conversation because your brain isn't really fully working at the time. Same thing during a seizure. You could pinch their toe or something may happen painful, but they don't perceive it during the time because the brain isn't functioning normally. Ways to get them out of it, there are a lot of folklore out there, and I don't know that they don't help. But in general, most seizures stop on their own. A lot of times they talk about putting an ice pack on their head or on their back. They do not swallow their tongue, so we don't have to get our fingers in their mouth and get bitten, especially dogs with long noses. The things some short-nosed dogs, brachycephalic dogs like pugs or French bulldogs, you do have to worry a little bit more because they have so much froth in their mouths or so much smaller, but they don't swallow the tongue, so it's not something that you should be sticking your fingers in their mouth.
That's another really good suggestion. I remember once being in a cage with a big Great Dane, and the owners told us that it just wasn't acting right, and all of a sudden I was in a closed cage, 7 months pregnant, and the dog started to bite massively and just crazy, biting out of the blue, and apparently that was a seizure as well.
That definitely can be a seizure, and they don't have control over those things sometimes. They're not intentionally doing it to people. Their dogs or cats love them. They just don't realize. It's sort of like being in a half hallucinogenic state and then somebody coming and grabbing you or noises sound different. They really just have to be very careful. A lot of times I tell people, get a pillow. The one thing with seizures you have to be is they can change. So one time the dog may be sweet or the cat. The next time it could be more aggressive. Seizures change in frequency. They can change in character. So we just have to be prepared each time to be cautious and caring. You don't want your dog falling down a flight of stairs. You don't want him breaking his leg, which would be very unusual. But you also want to be very cautious that they don't know what's going on during it.
So is it possible that an animal just has one seizure and then never has one again? Or is it likely that they'll always have seizures? And what is that called?
Yes, if you just have one seizure, in humans we only have a 20% chance of having a second seizure. So it is possible that you have an isolated seizure in your life, and a lot of times we don't know exactly why that would happen. Could be a toxin, could be something they got into, could be a virus, something that's come and gone. That being said, a bulk of dogs will have recurrent seizures. There are a lot of them because we do run into a lot of epilepsy. And epilepsy is a little different in dogs than in people because it's more of an adult onset epilepsy. With children, again, 60% of children will outgrow their epilepsy. It has been looked at and studied that about 10 to 15% of dogs will outgrow their seizures. So it's a lot less in general.
So we talk about seizures a great deal, and there's so many different types of seizures, and they can change, and they can happen once, or they can happen many, many times. So what is the difference between a seizure and epilepsy?
That's a great question. And in veterinary medicine, we somewhat use it a little bit more stricter than they do in human medicine. For humans, their loose definition is two seizures and you're an epileptic, no matter what the cause. In veterinary medicine, we sort of break it down into that you don't have a physical or metabolic, something wrong with your body, underlying cause. There's nothing wrong with you physically with your brain. There's nothing wrong physically with your body. Yes, there is truly something wrong with the brain, either chemically or electrically or wiring-wise, but if you looked at the brain with a visually or with an MRI, it will look perfectly normal. Those are the dogs or cats that we will say have epilepsy, where we can't prove they have a secondary disease causing the seizures. So it's a little stricter and a little bit, in my mind, better to say that so that we all know that we're talking about animals who have no physical underlying cause.
And is that more common in a certain age group or a certain breed as opposed to having another problem going on causing the seizures?
Exactly. Most dogs will start having epilepsy between 1, and the age range vary, 1 to 3 or 5. So usually we say 1 to 5, you can have epilepsy. And what you should note with epileptics are they start during that age typically. They're normal after they recover from the seizures and in between seizures. They have a normal physical and neurologic exam. They'll have normal blood work, including liver testing and other testing to make sure everything's working fine, and they will have recurrent seizures. If you fulfill those five categories, it is highly likely, well into the 90th percentile, that your dog has epilepsy. we see epilepsy very frequently in dogs because we have so many purebred dogs, and we think that there's a lot of, genes that cause epilepsy. So the stricter you have it, meaning one breed, the more likely you're going to have it in that kind of dog versus a mixed breed dog. Cats, on the other hand, since we do have a lot of domestic short hairs or sort of mutt-like cats that are sort of not a purebred, we see epilepsy a lot less in cats. It still can occur, but it's a lot less frequent.
That's really interesting. I never thought of that. Are there a certain pure breed that is more likely to get seizures than others or epilepsy?
I would say in general, if you look up any breed, almost always it says epilepsy can be a component to it. That being said, definitely Labradors are a classic breed that can have it. Beagles, use a lot of beagles for research for having epilepsy. So there are certain breeds you'll see, but it really runs the gamut of all breeds.
So is epilepsy a disease?
It truly is a disease. We feel like it is, again, highly based on genetics. You could have epilepsy for other reasons. For example, if a puppy has head trauma and then heals from it. Any type of previous brain trauma, whether it's not getting oxygen as a puppy, whether getting a significant bump on the head, whether having an infection that's come and gone, any damage to the brain can set up a seizure focus. That being said, most of them, as far as we surmise and can guess and put together, are really related to genetic epilepsy.
Interesting. What happens if it's an older dog, older than 5 years old, and it's not considered epilepsy? What would it be?
Exactly. So under one and over five, we have to say that there's a higher suspicion that we have another disease or a different type of disease. Under one, the big things that I worry about are an infectious cause, because their immune system's not as good, a congenital malformation, which could include something like hydrocephalus, which is known, colloquially known as water on the brain, where the canals are really big, and or, other things can cause it in puppies where they got into something, so a toxin, and or something's wrong with them metabolically, like a liver problem. So young dogs, if their body is okay and haven't got into a toxin, I worry about infections or congenital malformations. Over five, we have to start worrying about more acquired brain diseases, tumors, strokes, autoimmune diseases. The list can go on and on. Those are our big ones. Tumors and strokes in older dogs are what I worry about, especially in the 8, 9, 10 and above.
Yeah, I understand. I always worry when an animal comes into my office and they have these kinds of symptoms and they're older than 5 or 6 years of age. I worry what we're going to have to do next. But I think in order to find out what we're going to have to do next, we have to take a break first. I know we're on a roll, but after our break, we're going to learn not only how to diagnose seizures and other problems that could be other than seizure, and we're going to learn about treatment for these diseases. So as soon as we come back from our break, we're going to have again the wonderful Dr. Jason Berg, veterinary internal medicine specialist and neurologist, to tell us about diagnostic testing and treatment of epilepsy. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Dyson. The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radial root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well-informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well-read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to AudibleDeals.com. That's AudibleDeals.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jeff Werber from Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff here on Pet Life Radio. We want to hear from you. Listen in. We're on every Thursday, 1 o'clock Pacific Time, 4 o'clock Eastern Time here on PetLifeRadio.com. We are one of the only live shows on Pet Life Radio, and I'm here to answer your questions. You can call in at 877-385-8882, or you can drop me an email to drjeff@petliferadio.com, and hopefully we'll see you here on Thursdays.
Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
We're back, and we're glad you waited. I'm Dr. Diane Levitan from Peace Love Pets Veterinary Care on Long Island, and we're speaking with Dr. Jason Berg, board-certified veterinary neurologist and board-certified internal medicine specialist. Dr. Berg is an experienced veterinary neurologist and really a pioneer in veterinary neurology. He's really sought after by so many for his extreme expertise in veterinary neurology. He's been talking to us about seizure disorders in dogs and cats, what they mean, and how to recognize and diagnose them. And now we're going to discuss more about diagnostics and treatment of these conditions, as well as how pet owners can get support for their pets or for themselves when their pets have epilepsy. So, Dr. Berg, thanks again for being with us. I'd like to just start by talking about diagnosing these seizures. We talked earlier about a seizure versus epilepsy, and we talked about the different ages that animals could have seizures. Can you tell us a little bit more about why our pet might have a seizure and how we could tell what it's from?
Yes. So understanding how, if they have a seizure, like we spoke about, ideally taking a video describing it to your veterinarian. And what they'll do when you take them in is clearly do a great physical exam. They'll look, listen to the heart. They'll do a complete neurologic exam. And once we have that step and we are convinced based on the history and the video or the description that we're dealing with a seizure, there's basically a standard workup to begin with. The first thing we have to check is routine blood work, because metabolic causes or body-related causes can cause seizures. Low blood sugar, electrolyte abnormalities, kidney failure, liver failure. So a general CBC and chemistry panel are screening ones, as well as a good urinalysis. From there, the other things in a young animal, and probably should potentially be done in any age animal, is what's called a bile acid test. And the bile acid tests the function of the liver. Our general chemistry panel tells us if our liver is inflamed or not, but a bile acid tells us if it's working. And there's different ages you may run into different reasons why your liver is not working. For a puppy, the one biggest thing that we worry about is called a portosystemic shunt, or for short, just a shunt. And what that means is when they're in utero, puppies don't need to use their liver to detoxify things. So they have this blood vessel that bypasses it. Once they're born, that blood vessel shuts down and their liver starts working fine. Occasionally, especially in small breeds, other breeds can get it as well, but Yorkies, for example, are one of the most common. This blood vessel does not shut down, and it basically shunts blood away from the liver. And our liver is very important for detoxifying things. So if that shunt is present, you may have seizures. So a bile acid test is important to look for any underlying liver function problems. The other thing that has been related, and especially in middle-aged or to older dogs, to contributing to seizures is hypothyroidism. So ideally, we should check a thyroid. I'm not always sure that very many dogs are only hypothyroid from the seizure, but it can actually make them worse. So that's a good screening test. So those are all the initial screening tests. If the dog is between 1 and 5 years old, typically further testing, as long as the neurologic exam is normal and they're normal in between, is not absolutely necessary. They will highly likely be an epileptic if they have all those characteristics. Normal blood work, normal exam, normal in between the seizures, 1 to 5 years of age, and recurrent seizures. If you're under 1 year of age, then ideally they should potentially have further testing. If they're really young, they could actually have an ultrasound of their head if their soft spot is still open to look for hydrocephalus. Sometimes we do spinal taps to get a culture to look for infections or autoimmune inflammation. And then to step up from there, in young dogs where we really highly suspect a structural problem, or older dogs over the age of 5, ideally they should have a CAT scan or an MRI, because it gives you a much better picture of the brain and gives you a better chance to diagnose the underlying problem.
So what kind of things might we find on a CAT scan or MRI? I mean, is that sounds expensive, and is it really necessary?
Very good question. So in my personal opinion, between 1 and 5, like I had said before, if those all fit into the categories where you seem like you have an epileptic, I personally do not think it is necessary for the vast majority of dogs. Under 1 and over 5, the reason that I think it's ideal, if we can afford it, is the sooner we catch an underlying problem, the better chance we have to treat them. And for example, if my dog had a stroke, and I find that out, I can, A, look for a problem underlying and try and treat it, whether it's an overactive thyroid, whether it's something wrong with my adrenal glands or my kidneys or my thyroid. There's so many things that we can then treat the underlying cause. Plus, we want to be put on preventatives for it. We want to put something to prevent further strokes. If I have a brain tumor, a lot of times I hear this, he's old, I'm not going to do anything. There are non-invasive treatments. Sometimes oral chemotherapies, which are typically what I tell people, very mild because they're not going to cure the tumor, but they definitely can keep the tumor's growth slowed down, and the dog can live a lot longer and a normal and hopefully happy life for many of the dogs. So it's ideal to find out because we are treating the secondary problem directly.
Important to know. So if we have a patient that actually has true epilepsy, they have a pretty good long-term prognosis for a great life expectancy. Would you agree?
I definitely agree. Most dogs, the bulk of them, are going to live a normal life. There are all degrees of seizures. So the only caveat is some dogs will have what we call cluster seizures, will have multiple seizures in a day. Some dogs will have status epilepticus, which is defined as a seizure that lasts longer than 5 minutes. Both of those are life-threatening and potentially could kill you or kill the patient. And there are tough epileptics that really need a lot of different therapies to try and get them under control. So overall, yes, many, many, many thousands and potentially millions of dogs have epilepsy that live a normal, happy life.
Well, that's a great point. That leads us to our next important topic of this show today is how do we treat seizures? Now, we treat potentially the reason for the other causes of seizures, but how about how do we treat epilepsy itself?
It's typically not hard to do. There's some basic reasons why we would treat. One, if you're having more than one seizure a month, and the reason for that is the more frequently the brain does something, the better it gets at it, so they will increase typically. So some dogs only have one or two seizures a year. That may be unnecessary to treat because we're always balancing the difference between risk of seizures and risk of medications. In general, risk of medications is very low, but you try and only want to use it when it's appropriate. So more than one seizure a month, any dog who has a 5 minute or longer seizure, i.e. status epilepticus, anybody who has a cluster, because both of those clusters and status epilepticus are life-threatening. And then lastly, the last group I throw in, which is outside the epilepsy group, is there's something actively physically wrong with my brain, like a tumor or inflammation. So if I fall in those three categories first, more than a month, long seizures, or clusters, then it's very indicated to start medications. And there are all types of medications. There's newer ones, there's older ones. I famously tell everybody that there's no best medication. There is the medication that works for you and has the least side effects for you. And we're all individuals, and so are our pets. And so sometimes you may have to try multiple different medications to find that right one for you. The older medications, phenobarbital and potassium bromide, have been around well over 100 years and still are commonly used today. There is a lot of controversy with both of them to some degree, and I'd like to just discuss that for a second. Phenobarbital, we all worry about, can damage the liver, and it absolutely can. Overall, it is a low percentage of dogs that get liver problems, and the big reason for that is we have multiple other options. Years ago, we didn't really have any other options. We had to keep increasing the phenobarbital. We had to, you know, try and control them. And the higher you go and the more you're on and the longer you're on, the more likely you're going to get liver damage. So these days, we're very good at monitoring. Ideally, it should be monitored at least twice a year, the liver enzymes, and we change or modify things as if we see problems. Potassium bromide, on the other hand, can cause vomiting, can cause pancreatitis. In cats, it definitely can cause lung problems. So we need to be very careful and monitor these medications, but overall, they're very safe. Since the early and mid-90s, we have come up with many, many new medications on the human side, and we adapt those to veterinary medicine. And there are some that we can't use because dogs metabolize them very rapidly. But there's a whole group of newer medications. And the benefits of the newer medications are that they have less daily side effects. Phenobarbital and potassium bromide do cause a lot of hunger, a lot of thirst, weight gain. So what we really want to do with those dogs is be somewhat strict with their food and water, because we don't want them to gain a lot of weight. We want to play with them more and deal with it that way. Also, phenobarbital and potassium bromide can be sedative, especially at first. Most dogs and cats will get used to it, and then they don't seem as sedate from it. But the newer medications try and alleviate a lot of those problems, where they're not as sedative. They don't make them as hungry and thirsty. And as like I said, there's no better medication. Each one is sort of individualized. Some of the medications that are out there now, for example, are zonisamide, levetiracetam, which is Keppra, pregabalin, which is Lyrica, felbamate, which is felbitol, gabapentin, which is Neurontin. And there are others that we frequently use, and there's new ones always on the horizon. So there's definitely a wide array of medications to consider.
Wow, that's a lot of big names that are hard to pronounce. Realized I've been pronouncing them all wrong this whole time, but no one seemed to know, so that's good. So it seems like we do have a lot of really excellent choices and a lot of ways to really keep our dogs and cats enjoying a really wonderful quality of life. That's very encouraging. So that's the good news, but people who have pets with epilepsy are really looking for answers and support, and they're scared to death, of course. You know, what do we do? My pet is having seizures, and I just don't know what to do. And many of them even consider humanely euthanizing their pet because they just don't know how to deal with their pet having seizures. Is there any type of support group or anything that we could give our listeners to help them feel a little bit better about their pet with epilepsy?
Yes, the most common thing that I would say is that you're not alone. There are many, many thousands to millions of people who deal with pets that have epilepsy. And overall, the vast majority of them will tell you that although it's a chronic disease, their dogs have and cats have a very, very good quality of life. There are many, many online support groups. Your veterinarian has seen many hundreds of epileptics, if not more, over their careers. If they do not feel comfortable, or if you want to even have just more comfort, or have a very difficult epileptic, which is typically the ones that my colleagues as veterinary neurologists see, we're always out there. There are neurologists all over the country that can help you. And the only thing I would say is that the vast majority can be managed and have a great quality of life, and they don't suffer during it. Cats and dogs get scared when they come out of it, but during it, they're not really suffering. They're not thinking about when the next one's going to come. Nobody doesn't want to play with them. You know, the social stigmas that we get, animals don't get. So they're happy to be with you. They love to be with you. And yes, intermittently, we may have to deal with these seizures, but we can typically make their quality of life excellent.
And it's a good point you bring up about veterinary neurologists. So there are times when I, as a general practitioner, and even as an internal medicine specialist, need to reach out to you as my lifeline, really, for these patients who are very, very difficult to diagnose. So it's always good to know that if you're not comfortable with your pet's diagnosis or how your pet is doing on treatment, that you could always ask your general veterinarian to refer you to a veterinary neurologist. That's what they're there for. They're there to support you and your local veterinarian how to improve your dog's or cat's quality of life when they have problems, especially seizures. This has been such a great show and so informative. I can't thank you enough, Dr. Berg. You've been a really, really great guest. And of course, our producer, Mark Winter, for making this show possible. To learn more about Dr. Berg, you can go to the Animal Specialty Center online by going to animalspecialtycenter.com. He's also located in Yonkers, New York, and in Long Island as well. Be sure to check our website for a log to help you understand your pet's episodes. We'll leave a really good one up there. If you don't get to it, we'd like you to include a video, length of time that your pet has an episode, situations that are surrounding it, actions as closely detailed as you can during it, and anything in relation to the time frame in which the pet has the seizures. All of those things will be extremely helpful for you and your local veterinarian to understand exactly what's going on. If you have any additional questions for Dr. Berg or for myself, Diane Levitan, just go to PetLifeRadio.com and click on the Pet Doctor. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for a show, please email me at thepetdoctor@PetLifeRadio.com. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today, and I hope you hear from me again soon.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.